Okay, give me the update on the house. Are you okay? Are you all right?
has been the most stressful week of my life, I think. So we've gone from like a small 155 square meter 4x2 in like a, estate suburb, to a 1970s build. It's like a three story or like three level. So it's like level, middle, and then down again. So kind of like a, almost like a V shape.
Yeah, okay. You got a zigzagness going on.
It's amazing. And we knew that it was old and it was going to have some work and stuff done, but I didn't expect the people that moved out to have like not cleaned for 10 years.
Yeah, I saw the photos that you put up. Oh my God.
Yeah, so it's just been really, really stressful. Like it's amazing now, and we've cleaned the main areas that we live in. But yeah, it's just taken a lot more than I thought it was. But yeah, we're hitting the ground running. We're getting lawn actually laid today. So I'm actually up in like a corner of the house so you guys don't hear any noise. But yeah, we've got people out there laying lawn today for the kids, and we're just gonna get into it, get rid of the poo brown walls and
Yeah, is it like has it basically not been touched since it was built, or have they done some renos since?
The guy claimed to be a carpenter, so there's a few DIY jobs. I'm like, I noticed this morning one of the kids' blinds, it's literally a cardboard roll with curtain like blind material sticky taped on.
Oh,
I
that kind of
unlocked
DIY. Okay,
the
that,
pool.
Leah, all right.
I was like, if you can do it, I can do it. I'm sure I can
Yeah,
do this.
you're a carpenter. Yeah, obviously.
But yeah, no, it's great. Yeah, the kids love it. It's just so much more space. So yeah, we're really happy. I just had to get over the cleaning part,
How
which
far
is
from your old house was it? Is it quite, are you like same suburb or?
different suburbs. So we're up in the hills of Perth now, whereas before we were down sort of like the foothills. So about 15 minutes away. The kids are still going to the same school, so we're sort of kept within our bubble. I'm very active in the community as well where we were living, so we're still sort of around there. Just sort of a little bit more out, so we're not as, we don't go to the shops and see 1,000 people that we know kind of thing. We're a little bit more out now. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you're moving house, how does that go? I know you're in a like a bit of a cut phase. Did you switch to maintenance during that, or did you what how'd you deal with that?
Yeah, so with that, I was just, yeah, it was maintenance. I didn't bother tracking because we were eating a lot more Uber Eats than I'd probably like to admit. Especially when we came into a dirty kitchen, and we didn't cook until, I don't think our first cooked meal from Wednesday was until like properly cooked. Probably not until Saturday. So we had like 3 or 4 days where we were just kind of eating just grab and go, or at my sister's house, or just whatever it was that we could do, until we sort of cleaned up. So yeah, it was just, ebbs and flows. Sometimes you can be really on it and other times you're not. And it's just a matter of letting go. The more things you have to stress about, the more you're going to crumble. So I just let it go. It's, what's a couple of, 100 grams or whatever that I put on. It's not actually fat. It's just, the stress and the fluid and all of that put on. So yeah, but now back
Yeah,
into it now.
that's it. I think if you've got a good perspective like that and you can see the big picture and not get caught up in the, one day, week, whatever in there, you can kind of just keep on moving.
Yeah.
How is the how many weeks have you been in a cut phase? When did you
So
start?
I have actively been in a cut for 7 weeks now, about 7 weeks, give or take. I just, for so long, I was always trying to diet. And then probably for the last, I don't know, a year or so, because I had to do a lot of like internal work and things like that, I was just eating. Wasn't following anything. I guess you could call it intuitive. Sometimes it was intuitive, sometimes it was just meh. And it just got to the point where I want to improve things like my gymnastics. I just want to feel a little bit better. So then I decided it's a very, very minimal cut. Like it's not aggressive. It's just to make me feel better, and just feel a little bit more in control, I guess.
The intuitive thing is funny. I've been talking to a couple of people about doing the intuitive thing after tracking, and I even had someone ask me like, would I still lose weight intuitive eating? And I'm like, okay, there's a few different phases with intuitive eating. The first phase is the I'm totally in control phase, where you actually might lose weight because you don't really change how you're eating. You're not really being intuitive. You're just replicating how you know how to eat when you're on a diet. And you feel really good because you're like, oh, this is okay. Everything's fine. And you're just like scrambling to hold on to that last bit of control. And then you swing the other way. And the second phase is like the I'm totally not in control phase. And that phase can last for however long it lasts, and it will come and go. And it like you kind of eat everything and anything, and you just don't really have a sense of what your body really needs and what it's asking for and how to listen to it. And that's when you gain the weight back. So if you've lost some weight in the first phase, I'm like, you're going to gain it back plus some probably. And I know that this is probably terrifying for some people listening, but the weight gain, you know, it's not significant. You might gain like a few kilos if you've come out of a really aggressive weight loss phase where you've been, you know, like yo-yo dieting or cutting or being extreme. You might gain the weight back that you've lost plus some. And that tends to be the pattern that a lot of us are on because of the extreme diets. But intuitive eating, it's like, hey, you might risk increasing a couple of kilos. And then you find the middle ground. You have to go through those phases and then you find the middle ground. But it's like, that's the roller coaster of intuitive eating if you've come out of like dieting. How long, when was your first diet? Do you remember your first diet?
I don't come from a family of dieters. My mum is super, super lean, like naturally. My dad has a farming background, so it's like very active family. So I think the first time I kind of started dieting, I was maybe 15 or 16, when a comment was made to me, not out of a bad place. Definitely don't blame a family member for saying it, but a comment was made about sort of being a little bit chubby because, you know, you sort of get to that puberty age, you're not as active anymore, you're a teenager, like, you know, you just want to eat junk and hang out with your friends, and unless you're doing sort of enrolled sports, you tend to sort of become a little bit lazy, I guess. So a comment was made to me about that. So then it was, about 15, 16, I started my first diet, okay, sort of like a starvation. Sort of roller coastered through there.
It's so crazy. Like I was the same. My first diet was when I was 14 and I had no real reason to diet. I just thought that that's what I was meant to do. And I think I was getting boobs at the time and I was like, I just felt big. I felt bigger. And I remember at gymnastics and at the doctors standing on the scales and they would weigh us and noticing that it was like, I'd gained like 20 kilos in a year or something. And a lot of it was muscle. Like I wasn't an overweight kid, but it was just like, you're still fucking growing. And no one really tells you that. Yeah, I guess all the adults around you just know that you're growing, but I had no idea. And I was like, oh my God, I've gained a whole lot of weight. And like, that's a bad thing because that's what all the magazines and the television shows tell me. And I should lose weight and I have to do a diet. And yeah, it was like, why though? Like I just felt compelled to diet from this phase where it's like, you're still growing. Like you're going to gain weight. And I don't think people get lean in a sense that they want to like look lean until they've like completely moved out of their early 20s. Unless, like you said, unless you're like a hyperactive, like competitive athlete, I don't, and it's because being that lean isn't natural. Like it's not a natural state to be in. It's that people that are maybe not sufficiently fueled and crazy active or genetically predispositioned to be super lean. It's like, it's not a natural state to be in. I think the only times I've seen people like, for example, in CrossFit get lean are when they're fully matured and they're just at a later stage in their life. I think early 20s, it's like, you've still got like baby fat. And I know baby fat even is a bad fucking term. It's kind of negative, but yeah, it's such a hard thing to overcome as women that it's like, we are not meant to be lean. Not lean to the degree that people sign up for nutrition coaching going, I want to be lean. It's like, no.
Yeah, and it's really hard because it's sort of thrown in our face from such a young age. It's sort of, you feel like you have to, like there's no other, you know, and then everyone you follow on social media wasn't really a thing back in my day. But back then, feels so old. But you know, now it's all over social media, and I used to like almost subscribe to the women's health magazines and all of those, and everyone's got abs and bum, and back then it was about being skinny but having muscle at the same time and all of that type of thing. So, and then you look around at your friends and you always sort of seem to pick out the two or three friends that have that physique and you ignore the 10 friends that don't, and you're like, oh, everyone looks like that, when really
yeah
3% out of, you know, 10. And then, yeah, it's just sort of put into you. And when you think about it, like, unless you are paid to do it, or it's your job, you know, whatever it is, or you're a professional athlete, it's just not viable to look that way all the time.
It comes at such a great cost, right? Yeah. Like, there was that great article that Precision Nutrition put out years ago called The Costs of Getting Lean. And it was a very, just a nice kind of objective take on, hey, let's look at the pros and cons of eating and having a lifestyle that produces the result of an extremely lean body. And they essentially looked at, like, if you're 20% body fat, if you're 15%, if you're 10%, if you're under 10%, if you're under 5%. And it was essentially, what are the trade-offs? And included in those trade-offs were things like, do you get alcohol? Do you not get alcohol? The leaner you want to be, the more you have to say no to that stuff. Do you get to be social and eat out? Do you not get to be social and eat out? The leaner you are, the more you trade that off. And then it was like, it touched on some of the like psychological stuff where it's like, do you have to restrict your food? Can you become more obsessive? Can it become unhealthy? And it was like, the leaner you get, the more you're going to obsess about food. And it was such a nice way to look at just, yeah, the pros and cons. It's like, people think that losing weight is all winning. Like, there's nothing bad that comes from that. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I would argue that almost every single person that approaches us for nutrition coaching has come from shitty experiences with dieting, with trying to get lean. Like, you cannot argue that dieting and losing weight, producing, even if you actually like accomplish the leanness that you want, like, there's still a price to pay.
Yeah. And I try and say that with a lot of my clients is that if, you know, a lot of clients sort of approach things and they want to remove snacking and, you know, like, oh, this is my food diary this week. There's a lot of chocolate in there, but I'm trying to get rid of it. And I'm like, well, do you want chocolate in your life? Because if you do, then we need to include it. Because the point of this is that when we eventually finish, which we will eventually, no matter how long we stay together, you need to be able to continue this. Otherwise, you're going to be coming back to us or going back to another coach or whatever it is, and the cycle will continue. So we can't remove the things that you will eventually go back to. We need to incorporate them in, things like birthdays or you know, a wine on date night, if that's what people are into. They need to be incorporated in so that once we do part ways or once you decide to do something else, you don't go on your first date night and just go, oh my, what do I do with the wine? Drink a whole bottle all of a sudden.
I guess people really believe that it's like health comes down to like one thing. It's like there's one meal that's going to be the healthiest thing, and then there's one particular food that's the most unhealthy thing. And it's like, no, health is an equation. Like, health is when we add up your sleep schedule, when we add up how much stress you have in your life. And sometimes it's not necessarily the amount of stress, it's how you deal with it. When you add up how many kids you're dealing with and looking after, when you look at like how much training and movement you're doing, are you doing too much? Are you not doing enough? And then we can look at food. And within food, same thing. There's a whole equation there. It's like, what does the foundation look like? And then, hey, if you've got some chocolate and some wine in there, you've got a trip to the movies, a date night, or like a birthday party with the kids, it's like that one thing is actually not going to have much of an impact when you consider everything else that's involved. So I think taking control of the big things and letting go of some of that little stuff, and actually, like you said, including it is actually more helpful a lot of the time, because it makes it so much more sustainable for like real life. You know, it's like for real life, if we want to go out there and live our lives and you like chocolate, let's find a way to actually include it and be balanced overall, rather than like it be extremely dogmatic and cut it out and call it bad food. Because all it means is one day when you want to eat the chocolate and you do, which inevitably you will, you're just going to invite in all this shame and guilt around this food that you've called bad. And it's not bad. It's just food. It's just that one thing that you ate that one day.
Yeah,
it's funny. So I know that you said that you had to take a break from tracking and you've been going on and off dieting. And so you took a year of not tracking, and this is the first visit back to tracking again. What were you working through? What was the stuff that you were trying to overcome? Like, and I know obviously we just said, well, we both started our first diets when we were in our teens, but where were you at before you decided, you know what, I'm just going to stop dieting? Like, what got you to that point?
So after having kids, I mean, I've always had quite painful periods and things like that. And it was always, you know, go on the pill. And then just before I had my first child, I went through quite a, clean eating, raw, you know, farmer's market, sort of almost like a grow my own SCOBY kombucha, sort of like almost like a hippie phase.
Oh yeah, I made my own kombucha once upon a time. Uh-huh, I've been there.
My partner was FIFO at the time, and he was doing 4 weeks on, 1 week before. I don't know. FIFO is fly in, fly out. That's quite a common term in WA, but I don't know if it's used in other areas.
Yeah, yeah, I'm familiar. It's definitely an Australian one, though. I haven't heard it until I moved to Australia.
So, yeah, he worked on the mines, and he would come home, and every month he got home, there was just, because you've got to divide your SCOBYs every 2 weeks, and our whole kitchen bench was covered in like tubs of kombucha. And I was like, I can't kill them. They're alive. And he's like, you've got to get rid of them.
My kombucha babies.
They're alive. So anyway, I decided to go off the pill. And then after having kids, it was just excruciating to the point where sex, my premenstrual cramps, just everything was debilitating. I couldn't function. Yeah. So I ended up working with a naturopath. A local one in Perth. She's absolutely incredible. I put so many people out to her. And over about 18 months we worked together. I went and saw specialists, had a million internals and all of that stuff, and found out I have adenomyosis. Mm-hmm. So it's like endometriosis, but it bleeds into the muscle. And then so obviously when you have your period and you go to have your bleed, it bleeds through my muscles rather than through the uterus, which was causing all the pains. Yeah.
It's so interesting. Like it's impacts so many women. And I think a lot of people, it doesn't really get identified until they've gone through a lot of stuff, right? Like, have you spoken to many other people who have adeno or endo?
No, because that when I first, I knew about endometriosis and I guess it depends on the circle that you're in. So the circle that I was in, I hadn't really heard much about it apart from sort of articles and things. And then once I obviously it became a part of my life, I branched out. And now I think it's 1 in 10 have a form of endometriosis or adenomyosis. So it's really common. I was originally wanting to go the surgery path. So I was actually actively trying as hard as I could to get in for the surgery.
Oh,
and a girl that I knew from the gym went in and had it all done, had it all burnt out. And then I think months later, not even that long, it all came back again.
Oh my god.
It's basically I liken it to a weed. It's a weed in your body. Mm. It just will continue to grow and spread anywhere it can. So I ended up working with the naturopath again and going down the health route. So we ended up doing things like herbals and just really sort of cleaned up my diet, made it really about fruit and veg, didn't worry about sort of tracking as much. So I guess that's where the controlled intuitive eating comes into it. And things like alcohol, I am a occasional social drinker. I had to sort of stop that for a while we're just trying to, because alcohol, and I know now that if I'm going to drink, I will be in pain the next day. So that's an active decision. So if you go out somewhere and I decide I want to, it's with consequences, but I've made that decision. So it's learning what triggered it and what was sort of going on. So now everything I do, I have to think about it and then sort of, I guess it's like someone who's lactose intolerant but wants to eat cheese. You know what's going to come afterwards.
Can you explain it a little further? Because it's like a growth, yeah? You said it's like a weed, which is a nice analogy. For people who've never heard of, because I think a lot of people have heard of endometriosis, but maybe not necessarily endomyosis, adenomyosis.
So it's where the lining of your uterus, so the lining that normally bleeds out when you have your period, it spreads within your body. So endometriosis, it grows sort of everywhere. And adenomyosis, it grows within the muscle lining of the uterus. So it doesn't really have anywhere to go. So it sort of goes in there, and then the hormones that tell your body to go through the cycle and to bleed still affect it. So it still bleeds. But rather than sort of, I guess, being released out, it will bleed into the muscle and just sort of pull there, which creates the pain.
It's pretty hectic. It's like, yeah. And so how old were you when you realized that you had that, when you were diagnosed with that?
I was 28 or 29. So I've been having painful periods, like missing days off school and all of that, most of my, you know, high school life. Got put on the pill, which obviously masked a lot of it. And it wasn't until I decided to go natural that it all sort of come back. And originally I kind of tried to pinpoint it onto things, but now after sort of working through it and stuff, it was just that it was masked for so many years.
Yeah. I guess that's the thing with the pill. A lot of us have bad periods when we're in our teens and it's like, hey, just go on the pill. Like, this will help you as an option. And then those symptoms go away and you think it's solved, but it's potentially not. And as soon as we come off the pill, they return. And sometimes with a bit of a vengeance, because we're older, we have other lifestyle factors to consider, different stresses in our life, and it's just been on pause for so long. Like, yeah, it's a bummer that that's the way that the system works. It just is. But yeah. So what, I know you said that you have really bad cramps. And what was the other thing that you mentioned? Really bad cramps, pain after things like drinking. What are the other things that you deal with that?
So one thing that was quite a massive impact, I guess, on myself and my relationship was excruciating sex.
Around
my period, or around when I was meant to bleed, or even just after the bleed. So technically like 2.5 to 3 weeks of a month.
Yeah.
Depending on sort of, I guess, how we were having sex, it would be like, I would be yelping in pain type thing.
So was it just like any kind of penetration, like fingers, penises, any penetration?
Kind of like deep penetration. Would just sort of, I guess hit the area. And because it's so tender and sore, it would just be excruciating. So then I guess sex becomes very bland. And then obviously that has not a massive impact, but it does have an impact on your relationship, obviously, because that's a form of connection. That's something that we work through in education and things like that.
And so, okay, so you went to the naturopath, you started dealing with that, you found some natural remedies to help you and decided not to get the surgery.
So I figured because the surgery one is really intrusive, obviously they're going inside you, and the idea that they can either scrape it out or they can burn it out. So again, like, just to sort of, I guess, layman, it's almost like a mini flamethrower that they just kind of like go through and just burn it out.
Just get rid of everything.
Doesn't really sound that great. And then another option is they just remove your uterus, which I don't want to have more kids, but I also don't want to have that taken away from me. So that wasn't really an option for me either. And I figured if it's going to come back anyway, I might as well just learn to live with it, which is why I decided to go the natural path, because otherwise a lot of pages that I follow, some girls are in and out of hospital like once or twice a year getting surgery. And so all that downtime, all that recovery, the stress, the medication, it's like, why? But each their own, but yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a tough decision for anyone to make, right? So in terms of what you do then to maintain your symptoms and manage them, you've mentioned alcohol. What are the things with your diet and stress? Like, are they the two areas that you have to factor in, or are there areas outside of that?
Yeah, diet, stress, and sleep. So I guess pretty the main three that anyone sort of needs to. So at the time when I started working with my naturopath, I was, as she would put it, juggling a lot of plates. So I was trying to hold a lot of plates up. I was at that stage sort of off doing my own thing. I put a lot of pressure on myself. So I would often be up till, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. trying to make sure I met these deadlines that I'd put on myself. No one else had put them there. I was just like, no, I told people I'd have this done by this, so I'm going to do it, rather than just saying, hey guys, sorry, I'll get back to you tomorrow, or whatever it is. Obviously the kids, my daytime job, and just, you know, dealing with the impact that it was having on my life. So the pain that I was going through and trying to juggle that, it was just, I was trying to do a lot. So it was just more of a take a step back, you know, and I say this to a lot of clients now, actually, like, is anyone going to die? So, like, if you don't finish your tasks for the day by a certain time, will someone die? And if the answer is no, then it's okay. Like, you don't have to put that burden on yourself. And communication is just a really great tool. So if you're not going to do something that you told someone you were going to do, just let them know. They might not be happy with you, but, you know, you've informed them. They know. They can be angry or annoyed, but it's you've got to look after yourself. And if it's going to be – yeah.
It's so funny that it's like we – sometimes that's what we end up telling people as coaches, but it's just a, hey, if it doesn't have to be done today, then it's not a priority for today. You need to kind of be realistic about what you can actually accomplish. And sometimes what that means is with your to-do list, you're not necessarily looking at all the things you could do. You're looking at what absolutely needs to be done for today. And that requires you to almost be able to selectively ignore a lot of things that aren't the priority for that day. And then for people that you've, like you said, like for people that you've said yes to or given a deadline to, it's like, let's hopefully make the long-term goal to be better with creative deadlines that are fucking reasonable. But in the short term, just communicate. Like, I think it's so simple to just be like, hey, this is when I can actually get this to you. Bye. And like, my bad, something's come up. It's just like so simple. I think, you know, we feel like we owe everyone the world, or if we've said something that we have to do that thing. And I know that it's great to have that kind of integrity and work ethic, but man, to trade off your health for it or your stress or your well-being, it's like, you should have some integrity with yourself first, then with other people, but you should be the first priority. So yeah, I think that tool of just being like, hey, just communicate, like use your words. We're all adults. We'll all figure it out. It'll be okay. It's so funny. It's so simple, but it's something that I think everybody has to practice and just use their words.
Yes. Yeah. We just get so caught up in our own little bubble, I think. Well, I know that. And I still now, it's still an active thing that I have to practice and do, because it is very easy to say yes, 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 because you want to do things and you want people to think that they can rely on you and do this and that, and they can rely on you most of the time. But sometimes you just need to say, look, I double booked, or, you know, I'm really sorry, but I thought I was going to be able to do this today. Something come up. How about we reschedule to this day and I'll have it done by then, or, you know, whatever it is. Another thing that I like to do in regards to this, and I get clients to do as well, is just like a daily checklist. So just write out, just brain dump anything and everything you have to do in a day. And then, you know, doesn't matter what order it is, just chuck it all down and then go through and number it. So number one is your first priority, and then slowly work down. So at least you have your main priorities there, and then everything else down the track is important. I mean, it's all important, but if you don't get to number 15, but you got the first five done, I mean, number 15 can't be that important. It's 15. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's the skill of prioritizing, right? So something that I really like on that is I try to get people to pick three things where it's like, hey, you're only going to pick three things for the day. You've got a list of fucking 50 million things, which is great. You're going to pick the top three for today and only worry about getting those done. And then if you have time and the capacity to do maybe two or three more, awesome. You can celebrate the fact that you've done potentially five or six things. And that's going to be a really nice feeling, as opposed to the feeling of being like, I'm going to do six things today and not actually being able to do them, getting maybe five and being like, fuck, I didn't finish that list. Like, I didn't get that thing done. And suddenly it's like, you've done a lot of stuff for the day. There's so many wins that you've had and so much that you could celebrate, but it's robbed because all you're focusing on is the one thing that you didn't get do, or the stuff that you missed on that to-do list, which is, by the way, an impossible to-do list, right? Like, it is all of us. It's not a to-do list that we can actually do. So it's like, let's just plan on being up. Let's underwhelm ourselves. Let's do three things. And if you can do more, man, high five. That's awesome. But don't fucking pay yourself out for not being able to do as much as you thought you could do. Cause it's like, there's only so much time in a day and there's only so much energy that you have and stuff comes up. So yeah, I really like that. So, okay. You figured out stress, you figured out your ability to prioritize and actually delegate time properly for yourself. And then with sleep, what did you have to change? It sounds like you were a bit of a night owl.
Not by choice, but because I took on so much, I didn't have a choice. So, yeah, it was just once I made a sort of like a cutoff time as to when I would stop working. It took me a while to get my brain to sort of come to the party because I was so used to staying up so late, and I'd sort of lay there and start thinking about the things that I wasn't doing but should have been doing. So it was just implementing a lot of things. So I still try to do some now, and my sleep is very up and down still. And I mean, I've got two kids that still co-sleep, or they start in their own beds, but now they're in there by about 1:30. So I basically it's co-sleeping. Mm-hmm. Things like, and I, whenever I say this to my clients, I'm like, I know it sounds woo-woo and cheesy and the things that you read, but I did the brain dump. So writing everything down that, I didn't get done during the day and things that I need to do tomorrow, so that I wasn't laying in bed trying to remember it. It was on a piece of paper or in a book next to my bed. So just dump everything out. I did some, so I spent about 10, 15 minutes stretching, and then I'd do like a 15-minute yoga just off an app on my phone, just to really try and slow my body down, have like a cup of tea, did all that kind of stuff, and just sort of started setting those patterns. So eventually my brain registered, you know, once I boiled the jug, it was like, okay, we're getting ready for bed. And then I'd have the TV off and I'd have the yoga on and then everything's slow. And a lot of the time at the end, when you just sort of lay there, I'd almost doze off on the lounge room floor. So I'd get up and go to bed. And it's just sort of getting my body, setting little like triggers that my body knows, okay, yeah, okay, the time to wind down now.
Yeah, you repeat those enough times and your body's like, oh, it's sleep time. All right.
Yeah.
That's so perfect. Yeah,
doing that a lot, like not just for a couple of weeks. Like I was literally doing it for like 3 or 4 months every single day before to get my body into that pattern. And so now like most of the time I can just go straight to sleep. But sometimes, again, I'll have, you know, little times where my brain is overworking and then I'll have to go back to that. But because I've done it for so long now that it doesn't take long for my body to remember what's going on and get back into it.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. And then did you find, like, what's your morning schedule like? Do you have a morning routine as well, or is it more the nighttime routine for you?
More nighttime, because the kids jump into bed with me sort of in the middle of the night. Any kind of idea of a morning routine is out the window, because the second I try to get up before them, it's like I've got a sixth sense and they can tell that I'm not in bed.
They'll be How up. Old are your kids, by the way?
4 and 7. So yeah. They could be in their own beds all night, but they like to come in for a cuddle. So, yeah, it is what it is. But at one stage I did have a treadmill during last winter, and so I was like, yeah, I'm going to get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm going to run 3 or 4 Ks and then I'm going to do this and that. It's going to be great. And I'd get on the treadmill, and by the time I found like a Netflix show to put on so I could run to it or whatever it was, I'd hear the door creak open and, yeah. Mom, what are you doing? Mom, I'm like, go to bed. It's 5 o'clock.
Yeah. And I think it's like, you know, you've just gotten into this pattern where it's like you're focusing on sleep, and then suddenly, and we see people do this a lot where it's like we're focusing on sleep and stress and like the whole deal, the big picture. And then people are like, I'm going to get up at 4:30 in the morning to train. And I'm like, damn it. No, no, just sleep. Just sleep in, please. So yeah, I think I love the phrase. What is it? It's like, if you're getting up at 5 a.m. to do cardio, you're stepping over $100 bills to pick up pennies. And it's like, yeah. Especially for like, for people that are stressed out and they're struggling with weight loss and they're doing a ton of training and potentially they've been eating very little calories and they're not getting results, sometimes their results will actually come from taking it back a little bit and sleeping in, not overtraining, not overstressing their body, and giving their body a chance to actually give them the results that they want, because they're not like pushing their body to its limit. But yeah, I think it's funny. I think that's so true. I've totally done the same where I'm like, I'm going to do this thing at home in the home gym. And then I spend like 20 minutes looking for a podcast, and then I accidentally check Instagram. So then I spend 20 minutes on Instagram, and then I've got like 20 minutes left. And I'm like, I'll go in and eat, and I'll just like talk myself out of doing the session. I know, far out. So then what did you figure out with your diet? What were the things that worked for you?
So I'm quite a boring person when it comes to eating. I try and change it up for the sake of like content and sharing things and having ideas to give to clients and things. But generally, I'll just stick to the same thing until I can't stand it anymore. I love breakfast. So I love eggs, I love oats, things like that. My biggest issue that I had to deal with at that time was my daytime eating, because I'd eat a good breakfast, I'd eat a good dinner, and then I would be so busy during the day that I either just wouldn't eat lunch and I would just be picking at things and snacking, or I would eat lunch, but it would be really rushed, and then it wasn't sort of well thought out or well planned, so I had to kind of wind that back. And, you know, I try not to snack as much. So because my mornings are generally very busy, I'll have my breakfast and then I'll have a coffee. I won't eat until lunchtime, but then I have an afternoon snack, because when the kids get home from school, it's kind of a little bit chill for, you know, as chill as it can be with two boys. But like, it's kind of, I stop what I'm doing and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm hungry. So rather than have that morning snack, I have a bigger afternoon snack and then I have my dinner. So
yeah.
It's just working out how it worked for me and making sure I wasn't trying to cram, you know, 50 grams of protein into one meal, and then, you know, I get to dinner time and I've had like two vegetables all day, so I've got to put like, you know, all these veggies in my dinner. It's spreading it out, because that was causing a lot of stress as well, was trying to fit all this food in but then missing out like 5 hours of the day where I wasn't eating because I was too busy. How are you going to fit all your food in? Like, you can't. It's impossible.
Yeah. I think that's the funny thing, right? Like, a lot of people think that the unhealthy or the, like, the issues with their weight comes from eating too much. But a lot of it is like, actually, you probably just need to try and have enough throughout the day. And that can kind of feel like you're eating more, but what it results in is what happens at the end of the day changing. So it's like people that overeat at the end of the day or rushing to try and get food in and it's impossible to get enough in. It's like, if we can fix the lunchtime or the morning tea, lunch, afternoon tea, it's like that can totally change how people feel and the what their body does as well. And then in your case, it's like, hey, your symptoms are better managed when you're eating consistently throughout the day. So yeah. I know that your demand on your time has probably not changed, except for actually, no, I guess with the way that you started approaching your day with like your list of things that you were doing, you were prioritizing better. So did that then give you the time to do the cooking during the day and meal prep, or did you pick another day to do meal prep on? Like, how did you figure that out with time? Because you were still working, you still had two kids and a partner, you still had life going on. What did you do?
I'm really good with time, I guess. So I personally don't like to meal prep. I can't eat, you know, day old or 2 day old chicken. I sort of need to eat my food fresh.
I hear you. Yeah. Like the 2 day old chicken. Nope.
Yeah. So I'll have foods that are sort of just, they tick the boxes, but they're easy. And that's something, again, that I talk to a lot of my clients about, is you just have to tick boxes. Don't worry about 20-page recipes or Instagram photos or things like that. Just tick your boxes. It doesn't matter. And so, for example, with my breakfast, like if I have a cooked breakfast, which I do quite often, and a lot of people say like they don't have time. So I'll get my kids their breakfast. They'll be sitting down eating breakfast while I'm making their school lunches. I'll have eggs, well, the water boiling to poach the eggs. I'll have the toast in the toaster. I'll be cutting the sandwich, pulling my toast out of the toaster, chopping up their fruit, crack the egg, put it in. So I'm sort of juggling everything all at once. So it's all on the go. And then basically by the time their lunch boxes are packed, my breakfast is ready. I mean, I don't take 20 minutes to eat my breakfast. It's probably done. Like, I don't sit down and enjoy every bite and things like that.
That's the kid-free version of you that got to that.
And a lot of the time, a little seagull will come up. What are you eating, Mum? What is that? And then it's just eat that and then dishes straight into the dishwasher, which I guess if you haven't got a dishwasher, into the sink. And then, yeah, so I've fed myself, the kids have been fed, and I've done breakfast, school lunches, and that's in about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. So it's like simultaneously cooking multiple meals at once is the best cooking hack. It's what I do with dinner. It's like, I'll cook dinner and I'll just make sure I make an extra serve. And it's like, boom, there's lunch for tomorrow. It's like, if you can cook two meals in one go, you're going to be fine. Like, you're going to do really well. You don't have to do the 3 hours or 5 hours of Sunday meal prep and eat the chicken and the broccoli. It's like, just while you're cooking one meal, have something else on the stove, or like you do with like toast in the toaster, crack a couple eggs. It's like there are ways to do this with like very busy lifestyles without having to add more time onto just being in the kitchen. It's like if you're already in the kitchen, just the volume of stuff that you're making, just try and make it bigger.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's cool. So you just started to eat more. And what did that do with regards to your symptoms? Was it that you had more energy, that you felt better during the day? Like what result did that have for you?
All of it. So I automatically, because another symptom of endo and adeno is that you look pregnant because it blows up your lower abdomen where your uterus is. So I went through a stage, and that was sort of one of the main driving factors at the beginning, was that I was sick of being in a deficit. I was sick of training my ass off, trying to do all these things other than manage my sleep and my stress. You know, I was trying to tick all these boxes and I would still look pregnant, you know, so I was like leaning out up the top, leaning out everywhere else, but I still had this belly. And even now, like, I don't have a flat stomach and I don't know if I ever will. It's acceptance. I've accepted it. So that was my main driver for that. And then after sort of like maybe 2 or 3 weeks, it just sort of flattened for me. It would like flatten. So I no longer looked pregnant. I wasn't having daily pains and things like that. I had a lot more energy. And the more I ate right, the easier it got for me to sleep and the easier it got for me to manage my stress. Because as a working mum, trying to juggle like different jobs and kids and train and have me time and downtime and do all, you know, everything that we're told to do, you can't get rid of your stress. Your stress is always going to be there. Like, I can't sell my kids and quit my job and do all of that. So it's just about how you mentally can control that stress and manage it. And it just, just eating better gave me a better perspective and a clearer, almost like a clearer mind. And I was able to manage that a bit more. And it's just like a massive flow on effect. And it just helped with everything.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess when you were shifting from tracking to not tracking, you wouldn't have really known how much you were eating. Do you have a rough idea? Did you know if you had started eating more overall or less overall?
So probably more. At the time, I was aiming for it's still pretty consistent, about 30 grams of protein per main meal. My overall target was at the beginning 10 types of fruit and veg a day, and then I got that up to 15. So I was having like a lot of, and that's different types of fruit and veg, so not like lettuce every meal. So I was trying a lot of new vegetables. I was getting a lot in. It doesn't have to be like a massive serve, but just having all these to get all the different micronutrients and vitamins and things like that from them, and just bulking up my meals as well. It was a really good way to sort of bulk them up. I felt really full. I ate a lot more sort of legumes and things like that than I was before. I wasn't eating any, so it was sort of like a massive increase for me. I was also reduced my meat intake because my partner works in the meat industry and my dad owns a cattle station. So like meat's quite a big thing in our lives. So reducing my red meat intake helped me a lot with my symptoms as well, like not completely removing it. Like we still have meat, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. And then I introduced a meat-free day just to sort of help my digestion and take some of that sort of stress away so everything sort of flowed a bit easier. And that just sort of got my digestion working a lot better and helped me sort of become a bit more regular and stuff like that. And then with the vegetables and that, obviously helped boost my fiber and just, doing that over time sort of helped clear out all the stress from there. And, you know, the gut's known as the second brain. So having that healthy, again, helped clear up my brain and help with stress and everything.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for taking care of your gut and providing it with all the things that it needs, being a nice starting point for almost any problem that you're facing with your body. It's like, hey, let's just address the gut first. I've had a shitty immune system this year. And so I'm like, okay, well, I kind of need to think about how I can rebuild my gut. So it's been bone broth, vegetables, trying to add in I don't normally take probiotics, but I've been like, you know what, I'm just going to add in probiotics. It's a really high dose. It's like in the 10 million range. And then prebiotic food as well. It's just like, you if you can tackle the gut, you'll often resolve a lot of symptoms before having to go anywhere else potentially. So it's like you can kind of prevent the endless hunt of like, I need to try this, and is that working? I need to fix this, and is that working? It's like the gut is kind of where a lot of it will be happening. So yeah, especially if it's like immune related or hormone related as well. It's like, and then like you said, it's like stress too. It can definitely be a beautiful place to just begin to focus on without making any other changes. And I love that you had like this count of like, okay, well, I'm going to have 10 different types of fruit and vegetable rather than I'm tracking or weighing things. It's just so nice to have like it's almost like you're just counting on your hands. Like, this is how many fruit and veg I've had today.
That's awesome. Yeah, bought so much variety. And then because you sort of get to a number and you're like, okay, well, I've had lettuce, carrot, tomato, cucumber. Like, you get through all the average ones. And I'm like, what's that thing? Like, I've never had one of them before. Like, how do I cook it? Google. Like, yeah. And you just start sort of trying new things and different things. You know, some you like, some you don't. But, yeah, it's almost like becoming a kid again and trying all these new veggies. And I had this, like, still haven't been able to eat mushrooms because I was just scarred as a kid from them. I really want to like mushrooms because they're so versatile, but I just can't. But I got back into Brussels sprouts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. As a kid, I was forced to eat them because, you know, sit at your table until you've finished your meal type thing. And yeah, they're good. Yeah, they're good now that I'm an adult. Yeah.
I love roast Brussels sprouts, like especially the baby ones, the little ones.
Delicious. It was really good, very eye-opening as well. Because again, it's so easy to get stuck in eating, make a salad, you have your lettuce, your capsicum, your carrot, your tomato, your cucumber. We tend to sort of eat the same maybe five or six veg because they're easy, the kids like them or you like them, you know what to do with them, you don't have to think, and it's just there. But yeah, it's like sort of forcing yourself to be adventurous with food.
Yeah, it is, right? You kind of have to just get outside of what you know. Like, we live out, it's like, you know, you can get into the argument of like, do we really have free will? Because it's like, we just do what we know over and over again until we die. Kind of what it is. Like, you only know what you know, and you don't know what you don't know. And unless you are pushed by someone else to go and find something or try something or do something, or there's an objective for you to accomplish, it's like, yeah, the vegetables, like I probably would just eat the same thing over and over again. But that's really cool. I really like that. So we're going to keep pushing through this story. I know that we keep going on these tangents, but we've talked about you getting off the diet roller coaster, addressing these really bad symptoms, which turned out to be adeno, and then addressing stress, sleep, your diet. You were eating more throughout the day. You were eating different types of fruit and veg, reduced down some of your protein intake. And then how long did you do that for before you felt that you were ready to start tracking and start a weight loss phase?
So I worked with my naturopath for about 18 months. And then at the end of that, I sort of went on, I guess, kind of tracking. So this is what I work with my clients. I still had my targets that I had to sort of reach each day, as far as my vegetables and things like that. But then from there, I was incorporating tracking because that was what I wanted to do, because it's just sort of what I've known and I enjoy it, and I enjoy the control aspect. That was another, like, I like to have control over a lot of things, which is something I also had to learn to let go of because as a mum, you can't control much when you're a mum. Like, I have, like, honestly, I have no control.
We think we have control, but we don't. I sometimes think that it's almost like control needs to be replaced with another word. It's almost like we want certainty, or we want clarity, or we want to, it's like, especially with tracking, it's like all it is it's just that we put a number, we attach a number to the intake. Like, it's like, I know what 30 grams of protein is when I weigh it and I put it in my app. And I know, like, I can reflect on the day and see how much I've eaten and create my dinner based on, okay, well, I've eaten a lot of fat and carbs today, so my dinner, I'm going to make it more protein based or whatever it is. It's like, I feel like it's just, if you're someone who likes to have like very, I want to say certainty, like be certain about what you're eating and why you're eating it, I think it serves you well.
Yeah, so I was doing that. I wasn't very religious about it though. So I would sort of set out what I was going to eat or find the foods that I decided I wanted to eat for that week or whatever. And then I'd put them in once, and then I would just continue eating. And that worked for a couple of months.
So you do like one day of food entry and then just kind of repeat that for the rest of the week? Yeah. Okay. Nice. Yeah. So it's like you essentially make a meal plan and then use that meal plan for the rest of the day without tracking.
Yeah. So I was doing that, and it worked well for a while. And then I decided to sort of go off on my own and just continue with that. And again, it worked well for a while, but then it just slowly started creeping in, the extra snacks, and I'd get too late and I'd be too close to dinner. So all of a sudden I forgot to have my afternoon tea again, or, you know, my midday snack, whatever you want to call it. And then those sorts of things just started creeping back in again, because I had gone from not tracking at all to trying to have so much control again. I just kind of ended up in some kind of weird no man's land where half of myself wanted to control, but the other half didn't. And I wasn't, like, internally, I wasn't in the same place. So I just sort of, again, had to take a complete step back from it, and just say, you can't track, because the only way you can track is if you're ready to track. And obviously you're not ready to track, because if you were, you'd be doing it. So I kind of had to have an internal talk with myself. And then, it's just been, probably the past couple of months. And I had a couple of injuries from last year and beginning of this year. And I just sort of decided, like, no, I need to get back onto my nutrition and really get back into it, because I could just sort of feel myself feeling a little bit sluggish again and feeling sorry for myself with injuries. And so I was like, nope. And then, as soon as I started tracking again and felt good, because I do enjoy tracking. It's something that I like to do. Feel heaps better already. So
It's almost like you kind of know when you're ready, right? Like, I think I'm exactly the same. When I get inconsistent with eating and I'm tracking, it's immediately an indicator to me that I need to take a break. Like, and by inconsistent, I mean it's happening regularly. It's not just a one-off when I'm in week 4 of my first month of tracking. It's like, no, I'm usually maybe 2 months in and I'm not really enjoying the process anymore. I'm getting more frustrated than I am feeling good about it. And I'm just super inconsistent with almost every day. It's like you get to that point, or at least once a week, it's like something goes wrong. And I'm like, you know what? I actually need to step back from this. Is that something that you feel like now is a red flag for you with tracking?
Yeah. And all it does is just set you up for failure, because you get to the end of the day and you're like, well, I didn't do it. Like, I told myself I was going to do this and I didn't do it. Like, what an idiot. Or, you know, like, I failed type thing. Whereas you haven't failed. You just, you set yourself an unrealistic goal. Obviously you're mentally not there, or all, you know, things pop up. Life is ebbs and flows. Like, when it's easy, it's easy. When it's hard, that's the period that you need to kind of work on, because the easy part's always going to be easy. So you need to sort of have that strategy in place. And if tracking's going to cause it to become harder for you, then you need to remove it and put something else in place, or just understand that you'd like, maybe tracking isn't for you. Doesn't mean you're not going to get results. It doesn't mean you can't do it. There's just going to be another way for you.
Yeah, I'm a really firm believer that tracking is a short-term thing. Like, tracking is a short-term strategy. And that doesn't mean that you can't track for a couple months every single year. It just means that if you are tracking indefinitely and you're not feeling good, you're not enjoying the process, you're being really hard on yourself, you're inconsistent, you're having issues with actually getting the results that you want, which is why you're doing the tracking, I'm like, well, I don't have an argument for why you should be tracking right now. Like, you're not selling me. I think you'd almost be serve yourself better to not track for a while and then get back onto the tracking bandwagon later down the road. Because I think what you've experienced now, which is a really nice example of that, and even I was talking to Jen the other day about it, she's just started tracking again as well. It's like, when you start tracking again after taking a break, it's so much better. It's like enjoyable again, and you feel fresh, and it's a fun thing, and you can get into it, and you'll go through that phase, and then you'll get to the end of that wave of like, this is really fun, and you might start getting inconsistent, and then it's time to take a break again. And then you get on it again in another like 6 months. It's like, I think that talking about it as this natural cyclical thing that we do, rather than like, I've got to do this until I reach the goal, It's like, no, let the goal shift and move because life shifts and moves. And that's why we don't put happiness on the other side of the goalpost. It's like, no, we're trying to do things that make us happy now. And in the meantime, we'll track for a little while. And as we're making progress, we'll keep doing it. When we stop making progress, we'll take a break. And then we'll be in maintenance mode or doing whatever the heck we're doing. And then it's time to track again. We feel like we want to go in that direction of that goal again. That, you know, it's like just the direction is such a good thing to focus on rather than the arbitrary number. And it's like, it just makes it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah, 100%. And then like a lot of the time as well, we have this goal that we've set for ourselves, and some are really good goals, but, you know, like, I guess using weight loss for an example, it's like, I have to lose 10 kilos. It's like, yeah, but do you? Like, obviously that's a goal and you want to do it, but what if you lose 5 kilos, like you're 5 kilos lighter than when you were at the beginning, like that's not a loss, that's a win.
Yes.
You might not have hit that 10, but like you still made it to your best friend's birthday party. You had a wedding, you had a kid's party. You had kids that were sick, like you had all these things go on and you still managed to lose 5 kilos. Like that's a win, but we always seem so hell-bent on that final figure or that final performance or whatever it is that we're getting to that we don't realize the wins that we've actually had.
Yeah, it's like the freaking to-do list. People make a 10-kilo to-do list and they get five kilos into it and they're like, man, I've still got 5 kilos to go and I can't get there. It's impossible. It's like you've just lost 5 kilos. God damn it.
Yeah,
it's like I want you to have like a 1-kilo goal. Let's just, if you want to lose, like even if you want to lose 50 kilos, just lose one. Just lose 1 kilo. And when you've done that, lose one more. And then when you've done that, just lose one more. It's like, that's the place you want to be. If you fucking have a 50 kilo goal, it's like looking at the top of a mountain when you're at the bottom of it and you're just staring at it the whole time you're climbing it. It's going to feel impossible. You're never going to get to the peak. But if you just look at your feet and you take one step after another, you get quite far. It's just, it's so much on perspective and how we feel about the process. And if we can almost look at it in a way where we feel better about it, it helps us make that something that we can be consistent with and enjoy and make longer term in terms of the effort, because it's rewarding as we go rather than it's only rewarding when we get there. It should be rewarding as we go. And that's, you know, that's when we get into the conversation of like, learn to enjoy the process. So Olivia, are you enjoying the process right now? Is that where you're at mentally with tracking again?
I am. I am really enjoying it. And it's just for me, having those meals sort of pre-planned and tracked and knowing what I need to eat to feel good and without having to sort of and ah about what I'm going to eat just takes so much stress and pressure off myself. So every morning I know what I'm having for breakfast. Every morning I know, because like I said, I'm very boring with my eating. I'll eat the same thing like weeks.
It takes away the need to make decisions. It's so good.
Yeah.
Just being boring works.
I've got so much going on constantly every day that if I don't have to think about my food, then that's just an extra bonus. Takes a little bit of prep, you know, maybe once a week to sort of think when we do our food shopping, we sit down and write out a list, like, what are we going to feed the kids this week? What are we having for dinners this week? What do you want to take to work? What do you want to take to work? Like, we sort of sit down, we chat, write it out, take the list to the shops, buy it. And then that's as much thought that we put into our food. And then from there on, it's what we've said is what we're going to do.
So do you plan your day ahead in your app when you pre-fill? Like, do you pre-fill or do you plan just roughly what the meals are and then enter as you go?
So I tend to sort of do the whole meal plan thing. So I'll sort of set myself out what I'm going to eat. If I remember, I'll chuck it in the night before. Otherwise, because I'm eating the same thing, I do still like to have the habit of putting it in, because I find when I stop putting it in is when I start to snack and pick and miss things.
Deviate from the plan.
Yes. So I'm very much like a lists and ticks and crosses type person. So if it's in the list, that's what I'm doing. So for me, it's like a mental thing having to put it in. So I either do it at the night or I'll do it in the morning, but I'll have it put in before I eat the meal.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Okay, cool. And then you tend to use Instagram a little bit for this. And I know that you did an update with the photos, which is, I thought that was a really great post. And you post a lot of stuff just around like meals and just like you do really good stuff. Do you use Instagram for accountability, or is it just something that you like to do to help other people, like your clients?
It's a mixture of both. So when I first started my Instagram, it was actually because I was running boot camps and things in my local area. So I actually started it as sort of trying to get momentum and stuff in my local area. And then from there, it kind of shifted to accountability. And then I started working in a local gym in the area. And at the time, that gym, being a coach, I automatically got a lot of followers through the gym. And that gym ran a lot of challenges and things. And their challenges, to their credit, have gotten a lot better now. But at the time when I first started there, their challenges were really shocking. So I kind of decided to use my Instagram. Like, I understand the whole concept of the challenge, and I'm not anti-challenge. I think it's great to start building habits. I don't think that you should have an 8-week end goal as such, but it's good to get momentum and get habits and things like that. So I started to use my Instagram as a platform to show people that you can have balance and enjoy things. Because at this stage, the part of the challenge was for the first 2 weeks, you couldn't drink any coffee. So you'd have people that drinking 4, 5, 6 cups of coffee a day, not having any coffee, and they were complaining of feeling dizzy and headaches, and they can't sleep and all these like symptoms because they're having withdrawals from coffee. They're like, you don't have to not have coffee. Like, you can have coffee. So I just kind of used it just as almost like an educational platform for them, so that they could see that they didn't have to follow that. And then from there, I sort of, just sort of molded into what it is now. So it's a mixture of
how did the gym take it when you're like, no, fuck that, guys, drink coffee?
At first, because it was quite new, they were a bit like, oh no, like we agree with you, but we can't really share that because part of what the contract and stuff is that we have to follow the plan. And then from there now, like, it went from that, and then I ended up studying I ended up offering meal plans, like getting certifications to do meal plans, and again, just to sort of get them away from that and eating normal foods and stuff. So that's just sort of how my profile on Instagram grew, went from accountability to knowledge to accountability to knowledge. Now it's just a mishmash of this is what I'm doing.
Yeah. It's the real life thing, which I think is like the best thing ever. And I love that that's how it started, as like a, hey, you guys don't have to do crazy things to be healthy. Yeah. So I think you definitely come across as a confident person. Do you think you've always been confident? Do you feel like you're a confident person? Like, how do you, I know that just a lot of people are just don't like Instagram, and it doesn't mean that they're not confident, but I definitely feel like there's a connection with people that are really great with Instagram that are simultaneously usually quite confident. Is that something that has grown? Is that something that you've learned to do? Is it something that didn't come naturally at first?
It's definitely growing. So I was a very sort of very, very self-conscious, self-doubting, I guess, child, teenager, young adult. I honestly think my whole life changed after having kids. Yeah. Like, I don't know what it was, but after becoming a mum, I guess laying there, having like the world look at you as you push a child out, like, you know, having all these people you don't even know just touching you and prodding you, and like, I don't know, something about that just changed. And then it's just, I guess, I love learning. So I've not so much like university and that type of stuff, but I just love knowledge and love learning. And the more I understand something and the more I learn about it, the more confident I am to share it. So it was just after learning and learning for a long time, and then talking to people, and then actually knowing that people wanted to hear about it, I just decided, why not just share it? And then, you know, I run a lot of workshops in the gym and a lot of face-to-face things, and just through, I guess, at the end of the day, like, people can listen to me or people don't have to listen to me. Like, it's up to them. I'm not forcing myself on anyone. And if they want to listen, they will. If they take something away, and it's just, you know, you might say something to 50 people and 2 people will come up to you afterwards and say how amazing it was. And I'll come home and I'll talk about those 2 people for like a week. Yeah. Oh, I can't believe I enjoyed it. I had the best time. And then it was like, you know, 2 people out of 50 that have left me on this high for so long that make me want to keep doing it. So yeah, it's just reaching that one or two persons every time makes it all worth, you know, the confidence. And, you know, you record something, and because I've got like generally quite a monotone voice, I'll record something, I'll be like, oh, I sound terrible. Like, let me do
it. Really? You think you sound monotone? I don't think you sound monotone at all.
Oh, I just hear like such a dull tone to my voice. But I'm like, oh, people seem to like it, so I'll just keep talking.
I think that's, you know what, that's nice to know though. Like, I think sometimes people assume, because like, you know, I see what you put out on social media. I don't hear all the thoughts and all the, I don't see all the work that went into it. But I think people assume that if you've put stuff on social media, you don't experience those thoughts or those feelings about yourself. But it's like, man, the number of takes that I do for some of the videos that I put out, or like some of the stuff that I have on social media, or like, it's probably even less the number of takes that I do. It's the number of things that I don't do because I don't feel good on certain days, or I don't think I look good, or whatever it is. Like, I will simply not film myself on those days because I'm like, nope, I just don't feel good about myself, and I don't want to look like this, and I don't feel confident. It's really nice to hear people actually say that, because you don't see that side on social media. You just inherently, it's the part that you actually film. So I think it's kind of cool that you're like, ah, like my voice, or like this thing or that thing. But I still do it because it's like, hey, like it's enjoyable if people get something from it.
Yeah. And I'll do lives for the local gym, and I'll literally talk, send it, and then put my phone away. And it's like, I was like, nope, I don't care if I rambled. I don't care if I made no sense. I've done it as posted. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm done with it now.
Yeah. 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 It's just like, do it and move on. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. I have filmed myself doing lectures for seminars. I've filmed myself coaching. I've listened to some of my podcasts back, and I don't really do it anymore. I think it's beneficial to review how you speak and to pick up on little things. Like, I quite often repeat myself in ways where you may not notice it at the time, but I'll say the same thing in like three different ways when I could have just said it more succinctly the first time and left it. But I'll often try to like explain it further because I feel like it was confusing the first time. So yeah. I can pick up on that stuff, or I can pick up on little filler words. Like, I'll say nice, or or yeah, or like. I'll say like all the time, or I start every video with so, and I try to get rid of that stuff. So it's like, I can pick up on that stuff. But outside of those little things, I think it's, you end up being too critical to actually look at it constructively sometimes. And I think it's just better to find a couple of little things that may help you in the future and then leave it alone, because otherwise you do your own head in. And I think it's just better to just keep on, like, I almost think it's better to have consistent output with regards to, like, you know, having a voice and having a presence than to be reflecting back on what you've already done and pulling that apart to try to be better or try to change what you're doing next. I think it's like, you actually get better through practice more than anything. So you're better off just practicing and doing it. So yeah, that's interesting. So I wanted to say, it popped into my brain as you were talking before, the confidence thing. So yeah. Okay. Do you think then, I know that you said that you just do it, is part of your confidence just accepting things the way they are and accepting them if it's imperfect? Is that what you think allows you to do what you do?
I think so. For so long, I had to be perfect. And again, I think it comes down to like a really strong work ethic. And from a young age, we were like, it was about like hard work and dedication and this and that, which is all really good qualities to have if you sort of balance them. So it sort of come down to, something had to be perfect or I wouldn't do it. And now I guess it's more sort of like, I want to do this. Okay, do it, and then just do it. Like, don't give yourself a second to doubt it, because as soon as you give yourself a second to breathe, you'll just be like, no, I'm not doing it anymore. I look silly or whatever it is. You do it like with the lives. Like, I know I need to get content out. I know exactly what I'm going to say. I say it and then I send it, because if I sit back and watch it before I post it, I know that I'm going to be like, oh, I'm looking over there. Oh, I'm doing this. Or I'm looking at my hat, because I'm very, you can't see it here, but the whole time my hands are moving around. Like, I'm very, people are like, are you Italian? I'm like, no, I just don't know what to do with my hands. So like, my hands are constantly moving. It was actually pointed out to me by my son. And now, like, when I go onto the social media for the gym that I work with, every video, I'm just like, hey, 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 hey. And I'm
see,
like, oh,
I
no.
Think that- that's a great, I love watching people who use their hands. I think it's so much more interesting to watch. Same thing, like I get told that I talk really fast, and this is, so we get a lot of feedback with the CrossFit seminars. So I get a lot of feedback on my lectures. They're like, Kate, just slow down, please. Just take a breath. And I'm like, I don't know if I agree. And this is like, this is obviously something that I get really defensive with as well. But I'm like, I like listening to people that talk fast. I'm sure I'm a little bit ADHD. Like my brain is just, that's the speed my brain goes at. And I like listening to people that are fast because I don't like people to waste the time that they're talking to me. Like, it's like, get to the point, get there quickly, say what it is, and then finish. Like, so yeah. I think I just talk really fast, but I think it becomes stylistic. And so I think the hands thing is the same thing, but I guess once someone points it out, you're like, oh, I'm hyper aware of this now.
Because I talk really fast as well. And it's to the point now when I give workshops and talks and stuff at the gym, I'll get to the end and then I'll be like, okay, so I know I talk really fast. So if anything went over your head, please come and see me. And I'm more than happy to talk to you one-on-one about it. Because it's just like people are like, whoa, what is she saying? And I was like, no. Because, yeah, the same. Like I have so much information I want to get out. And like it needs to come out now. Like you guys need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I'm on board, man. I back that. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, okay. You said that accepting it and dealing with things like the hands, what else do you feel like you have to accept? I want to speak specifically to the post that you put up that was your own before and after. Is that something that you would have done like 10 years ago?
No, because nothing was ever good enough. And even now, like after doing that, I would look back at the photos and I was like, well, because, you know, I haven't gone from 200 kilos to 50 kilos. Like it's not, there's not a massive difference in those photos, but like my measurements, there was, I can't remember how much it was now, but there was like quite a significant amount of centimeters that had gone and my weight had only gone.
You could definitely see it. You could see that the images were quite different.
Yeah. So I noticed through sort of like my waist had, rather than being like a rectangle, I kind of had a bit of a waist now, kind of athletic build. Yeah, just things like that. But no, it's just my whole, I guess, journey has always been like, try and love yourself. You have to love yourself, positivity. And I'm like, well, yeah, there'll be days that I love myself and there are days that I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, look at that, like muscle and oh, look at my ass and look, oh, like I look good. And then there'll be days when I look in the mirror and I'm like, okay, like, yeah, like it's just, so I've stopped trying to force the whole positivity and it's like, just be happy, just be accepting of it. And then I just, yeah, it kind of, it's not, probably not the right word, but like, it's almost like a little bugbear of mine is the whole positivity thing that's, everything's taken to an extreme. Like, yes, be positive, of course, be positive, but we can still be negative. We can still be anger, sadness, frustration. All of those emotions are still acceptable. Like we have to have them. So it's the whole positivity movement for me, forcing people to love yourself every single day, no matter what. Like you are the best. Like, yeah, you are and you should. But you're going to have days where you wake up and think like, fuck this. Like, fuck my partner, fuck my kids, fuck my job, whatever it is. And that's okay. You can have those days. Just don't have them, don't have too many in a row. It's, you know, like, again, with my clients, I'm like, you can accept those emotions and feel them, but just don't let them overtake you.
It's like you don't judge yourself for having them, really. Yeah, it's like if you just let them happen, they'll come on by and they'll just slide through and suddenly the next day things will feel different again. It's like you wake up feeling different every day.
Exactly. And especially with females, with their hormones and things, like one week we feel amazing and we think we're like goddesses. And then a couple of weeks later, we're just blobs on the couch. I want to cry. Like, you
know, that's me at the moment. Yesterday I cried twice and I can't remember what it was. I can't remember what it was about. Oh, I booked, we've got a weekend in Thailand. I'm doing a seminar in Bangkok. So we're going to stay in Phuket for the weekend afterwards. And I've been looking at hotels for fucking like weeks where I'm just like, oh, which one should we stay at? I like this one. What about this one? This one's more expensive. And anyway, we finally decided where to stay. And I've had so many goddamn tabs open on my computer that I had two of the same hotel from different websites and one was cheaper. And I accidentally booked the more expensive one and it was like non-refundable now. And I was like, no. And I just lost it. I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this. So I've go from crying or I've said it. I've lost count of how many times I've said it to my phone or when I'm driving. I'm just like, fuck off, cunt.
Yeah.
To anyone who's not in Australia, I apologize. It's not an uncommon thing to say. I'm just like, So yeah, it's like, I think you're right. It's like the positivity taken to the extreme or to the point where it's forced positivity. That is so much worse than just accepting a negative experience or a negative feeling or emotion. It's like, there's a really good quote actually in Mark Manson's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. That's a great book. And I think a lot of people, I remember telling a friend to read it and he was like, oh, no, my friend who's a psychology major or like doing her master's in psychology said that it's bad. And I was like, buddy, you just need to read something. You're having a bad time. Like just something. Don't like, and if she's telling you that it's not good enough, I'm like, man, she shouldn't be a psychologist. But anyway, this book has a quote in it that was like having a negative experience and forcing yourself to feel good is actually a negative thing. But having a negative experience and accepting it is actually a positive experience, which is a little bit of a mind fuck, but it's essentially saying, if you're not feeling good, don't force yourself to feel good. It won't actually work. When you're feeling bad, if you can get to a point where you just accept that and it's just okay because it's part of being a human, that in itself is a positive experience.
Yeah, and that sort of really helped me, I guess, with doing posts like that. Like you said, 10 years ago, I would have been looking for the positivity side of things and I would have looked at that those pictures and been like, well, there's nothing positive here. Like, I haven't lost 15 kilos. Whereas now it's like slightly educational and then it's like a neutral thing. Like, well, yeah, I have lost something and you know, I have had all these barriers to come over like that I've come up against in the time that I've been doing this, like sickness and moving and packing and work and like all of these other things. Like I listed them in my post and that post actually come about because I had a few clients that were coming up against hurdles and again were sort of saying like, well, nothing's working. I keep coming up against these things. And it's like, well, just keep putting like the mountain one foot in front of the other and don't focus on the end. Just focus on what you're doing right now. Focus on lunch, then focus on your dinner. Like just move slowly and then you'll build that momentum up again. You have all these little wins rather than trying to look for the massive win. Just look for the little wins and you'll feel good. Then you'll feel good. Yeah. Then you'll feel good. And then it just snowballs and you'll continue.
Yeah, it's almost like people think that it happens in like a massive change. Like it's just it's like the myth of the overnight success with people that become famous, and it seems like it happened overnight, but it never does. There's always some crazy long story of them working their fucking ass off, hustling, and like you know, like those musicians that have been busking on the street for years, and no one ever knew who they was, and it was like, hey, maybe they signed some kind of deal with some record. Obviously I'm not in the music industry because I don't know what I'm saying, but you know, it's like, hey, you could sign a bit of paper that means that you suddenly make a lot of money and that moment can be significant, but that still is not the definition of an overnight success. Like it just doesn't really exist because all the things that came before that led you to that point. And it's the same thing with weight loss. I think the problem with the before and after photo is that lulls us into this false sense of significant change will happen and we'll be able to see it in the same way that you see a before and after photo. But we don't ever see that. All we see is a before and a during photo. And years ago, I called it the now photo. It was like, there's actually no before and after photo. That only exists because of technology. That actually isn't a thing because in real time, all we get is the now photo. So it's like, you know, it's the progress photo, I guess. The before and after thing, it's like, the before picture exists because that's the moment in time, but then the after photo is actually constantly moving. So there's often the after photo, which you actually don't see, where someone's regained all the weight back plus some, or the after photo where it's like somebody's been able to maintain it, or the after photo where they've continued to lose weight because someone, for example, like you, you're like, hey, I've posted it. I'm in week 6 or 7 and I'm still in my journey. Like I'm still going. So there's another photo to come, but we're just not there yet. It's like, I'm actually just looking at this progress, this point in time, and it doesn't mean anything. It's just this now photo of here's me on my journey at this particular point. And if I don't look at the end and judge myself according to all the things I've got to do yet, or all the ways that I still have to change and I'm still unaccomplished, it's like, if I can just look at where I am now and where I've been, the before and the now photo, it's like, oh, okay, hey, look at what I've done. But yeah, I think the before and after photo, it's such a trap. It's such a trap.
Yeah. It's just a marketing tool, really. And I know in the past I've been guilty of using them. And again, like the gyms that I work at and things use them. It's just to get people in for that exact reason, to say, wow, like look at the results I can get. And it's like, yeah, you can get those results. But then there's a lot more that happens after that picture. It's not just that one picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Even the person in the photo, it doesn't feel like it's a big change. It feels like a tiny little change. They've made a little bit each day. And then over time, suddenly they can put these old photos, one old photo and one current photo together, and you see it. But even, you know, it's like even the person taking the photo probably hasn't noticed that drastic change until they are looking at the photo. They're probably looking at their body in the mirror going like, I still want to lose this. I still want to lose that. Like, I'm still not there. I haven't accomplished my like fantasy body. And it's like, if you could actually talk to the person in the photo, it would tell you so much more. But we see the photo and we see this really massive change and we suddenly want that result. And it is not how it feels. It's only how it looks in that particular photo on the internet. It's not what real life is, unfortunately. Yeah. I think, we've actually not done any before and after photos on our page. I know that I shared yours actually as like yours was more of a progress pic, I think. And I liked the fact that you pointed out how scary it was for you to do. But yeah, we haven't really used before and after photos, and it's really hard because we're a nutrition business that sells one-on-one nutrition coaching, and not having a before and after photo is like not having evidence that you get people results. So it's like, I'm tempted to do it most days of the week where I'm like, I kind of want to have a before and after photo. I know that it would get a lot of attention, but I think the thing that stops me from doing it, and I don't know if you've had this, but the previous company that I was working for, whenever they shared a before and after photo, half of my clients would be mega upset that week. They'd just be like, I'm just not there yet. I see other people having success. It's so discouraging. I feel really bummed about it. It's taking so long for me. I've hit all these barriers. And I'm like, hey, please let go of that thing that you have in your mind that you have to get to and you have to accomplish before you can be happy. Because it's just an arbitrary thing. Yeah. That frustrated me so much. Have you had people have that where they're like, oh, I saw this thing on the internet and I want to do that and I'm not there?
Yeah, I have. And first of all, it takes a lot of the energy away from what you should have been talking to them about or want them to do, because now you've sort of had to redirect the whole feedback or the whole talk or whatever to sort of taking them off the ledge as far as like wanting to throw in the towel. But then like it's also a good talking piece as just to like sort of compare lifestyles and compare. So if they're comparing an influencer or a celebrity or something, that's their job. They've got people that talk to them.
The person with the personal chef and personal trainer. Yeah. And
or if it's like someone who won a challenge recently and you kind of like maybe again using the gym for an example, and it's like, okay, well, you know, that girl had a lot of weight to lose and she lives at home with her parents and she's studying. You've got kids and a job and your dog just passed away, so you've got the stress of that. Like you can't compare. You've had a lot more to overcome, and then within that, this is what you've achieved. So like, you're comparing apples and oranges. So it's nice to look at that, but and you know, we want to congratulate her, but if it's going to cause jealousy or envy or something like that, then it's a negative impact. So I just don't want you to look at them.
Yeah.
Easier said than done, obviously, but.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's just acceptance again, right? It's like accepting that other people will – be doing things that are just different to you. It's the same way that I accept that Tia Claire Toomey is fitter than me. She is living a very different life than me. You know, it's like, I think when we see extreme versions, we're like, oh, that's almost like humorous. It's hilarious. Like, of course you're going to accept that. But it's like, I think when it feels closer to home, because it's a goal that we share, it's like, I want to lose weight and that person wants to lose weight. They've got a before and after photo and I don't. Suddenly you feel that comparison come up, but it's like, they've got a totally different life to you. I can't compare my open results with Tia Claire's open results because we've got a totally different life. We've got the same goal. I want to be fit as fuck. She wants to be fit as fuck, but I'm not winning the CrossFit Games and I'm okay with that. It's the same thing.
To the sacrifices as well. Like that person that put the before and afters, did they sacrifice their partner's birthday? Did they sacrifice alcohol? What did they sacrifice? Whereas you're still having a drink on the weekend, you're still going out for date nights. Like you got to kind of weigh up, like, would you rather look like that but not do that? Or would you rather continue with what you're doing and live a happy life? So it just sort of circles back to what
you're doing. We're back to what's the cost? What is the cost? And that's not just during the process, but after the process. I have so many people that I'm like, we could bring your calories down, but what is the chance that when we stop, you will want to eat more and eat in excess of what you were eating previously and regain some weight? Because it's like, I would prefer to just keep the calories where they are and just hang out here and not worry about rushing it. Because if it means that you just regain the weight, is it really worth it? What is the long run? It's like the person who put up the before and after photo, you haven't seen their after photo yet.
Yeah.
And I think as we've probably all experienced, when we do extreme cuts and we accomplish that goal that was really hard to get to, those results are often the hardest to maintain, unfortunately, which is what we try and do a little bit differently.
Yes. Yeah. We're more lifestyle and just being happy with your body, but still having your lifestyle versus restricting and being miserable, but looking good for photos type.
Yeah. It's like the health, the aesthetics, the performance. Yeah. All of that plus consider it the long term. Like what when we consider for the rest of your life how you're going to manage that, it changes your perspective on all those things. So yeah, man, I think that brings us to a really nice little end point. I keep on having this happen where we like kind of go full circle and I'm like, oh, that was so magical. This is such a good way to finish. So that was amazing. So guys, you can follow Olivia. It's Project You Fitness. And she's all over Instagram. And then if you want to work with her, you just got to get in touch with us once we reopen our books, which is all exciting times. But thank you so much for coming on and making some time in your busy day while the lawn's being laid down.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun. I don't know if I'll listen back to it, but hopefully it'll make sense.
It was good. I'm just going to say it's great. Like I'm not going to listen to this again, but it was awesome.
Yeah.
Amazing. Awesome. All right, that's just it.